Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Well, good evening and well, happy Father's Day. Here we are live from the most beautiful city in the world, Houston, Texas. And let me just do this and watch how beautiful this is. Look at that sun coming down over the Texas Medical Center. That's all it takes, just right there to just be able to see God's glory right behind us. And I work right across the street here at Texas Children's Hospital and Baylor College of Medicine. And I just love Texas. And I want to welcome the BBS Radio Network into Texas as of this week, moved from that wonderful state of California. But let me be honest with you. Texas is as close to heaven as you're going to get until you get to heaven. California may be a little bit down the line, but tell you what, welcome to Texas, BBS Radio, and it's great to have you in the Woodlands in the spring area. So thank you for being here. We're going to have an awesome guest tonight, and to be honest with you, I have been waiting to have a conversation with our guest tonight ever since I read her book, In Pursuit of Love. And I've read it twice, and then I scanned through it again today just to make sure I remembered it the way I wanted to remember it. I thought I should remember it. And I have been looking and waiting for this moment in time for quite a while. We've had a little trouble. I think the last time we were scheduled, we accidentally scheduled her while she was on a plane, and we just couldn't get the technology worked with that. But hey, we got her here tonight, live on Father's Day, and I can't think of a better guest to have this evening. Next week, we're going to have Gordon Clark on June 27th. I want you to know that Gordon's going to be an awesome guest. He is the founder and CEO of the Bella Foundation, and I'm looking forward to a wonderful conversation with him. And then get ready for this. You may want to lean into the camera a little bit. On July 4th, from Mrs. Doubtfire movie, the oldest daughter, Lisa Jacob, of Robin Williams and Sally Field, right here, the author of these two books, is going to be with us July 4th as her work is with Vietnam vets now with PTSD and yoga and meditation and mindfulness. And her own anxiety of how she dealt with her own stress and depression. It is a wonderful. We've already pre-taped that interview. Curtis and I had the wonderful privilege of interviewing her this week. And it was a great. Matter of fact, I think we talked for about an hour and a half. And it was wonderful. That will be played on July 4th. But tonight, and you'll want to write this down, 888-627-6008. If you want to get involved in the conversation, if you want to get involved and just maybe a question or a comment, but I think tonight you may want to strap the seatbelt on and tighten it a little tighter than normal, because we're going to talk about a situation and a problem, a tragedy, an epidemic, and I can just keep on going with adjectives, that's happening right down on the streets of Houston, Texas. Matter of fact, I think we probably are considered the world hub of human trafficking. But I want to kind of just give you a little bit, since you may not, when I do that, it almost blinds you, when you may not know the guest, but let me just tell you, Rebecca Bender from Dallas, Texas, which is awesome, awesome city, is the CEO of the Rebecca Bender Initiative. And you're going to say, what's that? We're going to find out all about that. The founder of Elevate Academy. the largest online school for survivors and human trafficking, not in the state, not in the country, not in just this hemisphere, in the entire world. And I could just literally go on from her being involved, recognized by the FBI, by being a regular testifier and expert witness in trials and investigations around the world, around the nation, being trained, training over 100,000 professionals, including our Homeland Security personnel, local law enforcement. She's on a National Advisory Committee of Sex Trafficking of Children and Youth in the United States. The committee advises the Secretary of the U.S. Department of Human Services and the Attorney General on practical and general policies concerning improvements to the nation's response to sex trafficking. And we're going to talk about this really deep tonight, and I think this is important. This is one of those that turn off the TV, set the phone aside, because I have a feeling that every one of us come in contact with someone that could be involved with this, possibly, if not on a daily basis, on a weekly basis. So this is very important. She is a college graduate. She has all kinds of initials behind her name. Master's degree in religious studies. And we're going to talk about faith tonight. So be ready for that. If that offends you, I will preempt that up front. And you can switch off, because it's part of her life. And we're going to discuss it. And she is just a sought-after speaker, social influencer, a consultant. And she has her own podcast. But her book, In Pursuit of Love, was published in January 2020, a couple of years ago, just a year ago, by the wonderful publishing company of Zondervan. And she lives in Dallas, Texas, with her husband and four daughters. Welcome, Rebecca Bender, to the program. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, thank you so much.
Well, it's good to have you. What are you doing in Dallas?
Your intro. I just moved here. We've only been here a few months.
So where'd you come from?
I came from Southern Oregon. So we're used to having beehives and chickens and collecting eggs and, you know, blackberries in the morning for breakfast. This is a whole new world with having HOAs.
Yeah, and you're going to have eggs and bacon. You're going to have Texas Longhorns here for breakfast. But it's good to have you, and I appreciate it. Tell your husband thank you for sharing you on his Father's Day, and your daughters and your family for sharing you with us for this short time that we're going to be together. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, we're honored to be here. Love what you guys are doing, and I don't know that your intro was so great. I'm like, no pressure now.
I know a lot about you, and I've watched, and I'm not stalking or going online trying to figure out stuff, but I always like to find out what you get involved with, because I really believe the platform of speaking publicly, you want to be able to believe in the people that you have on, that you're sharing their stories with the world. So tell me, Rebecca, just right out of the chute, because I don't have preset questions. I'm just going from the spirit here. What gets you motivated to put both your feet on the floor, getting out of bed every morning? What do you want to accomplish that day that would make it, when you go back to bed later on in the evening, you go, wow, I did what I was created to do today? What would that be for you?
Wow, that's a good question. I put my AirPods in hopes that would help with any sound or echoing. Does it sound okay?
Oh, it sounds great. Yeah.
Okay, good. You know, I think for me, I just want everything I've been through to not be for nothing. Oh. And I think that we've all been through something. I think we're all a lot more alike than we are different. We've all had heartbreak. We've all been embarrassed. We've all been maybe tricked by a close friend. We've all experienced maybe a shame for decisions we've made. And I think when we're willing to be vulnerable, maybe not always on giant public platforms like you or your guests or me, but when we can be vulnerable with people around us, it's just an ability to really bond and become more united as humans and to support one another in hopes to create a better world. I mean, yeah, it's weird to think about trying to create a world that you may never live in, that just is going to be better for your kids and your grandkids. And I don't know. That's what goes through my mind when I get out of bed. But I don't always nail it, that's for sure. Some days are just like full of meetings.
With all this stuff that you have going on, you sure have the fingers and the webs of going out into making an impact on not just one part of the world, many different areas. And I think that's really important. What is the Rebecca Vendor Initiative?
Yeah, well, it's great. It's a great segue into having your hands in lots of things. So it, you know, when we first started this, I didn't necessarily want to name my name something that I'd get pigeonholed into. I started in the fight against trafficking, not actually knowing what I'd do. I just knew that I had this crazy story of being trafficked myself. And I know we're going to get into that. But I didn't really know. It took me a while to find my place in this social justice movement years and years ago. And that's what we now help other people do. We lead leaders to fight trafficking, impact lives, and change culture. And so, you know, trafficking isn't an isolated incident. It affects kids coming out of poverty. It affects homelessness. It affects mental health. It touches the foster care industry, the criminal justice industry, substance abuse. It's not, these things don't happen in silos. You know, they're affecting all of our communities, and we all play some kind of role. And so that's really what we try to do, is help people find their lane and do it well and equip them with truth and tools to do so.
You being, and we'll talk about it as heavily as you want to talk about it, I'll let you lead that later. You being a mother, a parent of four daughters, how concerned are you about and have been because of what you got hooked into that you want to protect them?
Yeah, that's a great question. Some people might be surprised by my answer. I find we live in a hyper pornified culture like never before. And the way it's impacting the cell of sex is at astronomical heights. And that means we can't just protect our daughters, but we also have to build character in our sons. I think it's coming around all of our kids and really finding out, like, how are we going to raise them in a generation where you have a tablet in your pocket, you know, a phone, access to the internet in your pocket. You know, you can put all the filters on your phones that you want. Your kids are still going to see something at a friend's house or on someone else's phone that doesn't have a filter. How do we do this well? And how can we maybe begin pushing back a little bit on the world that we've created? So yeah, we're going to get into so many more tips about how to keep your kids safe. And you'd let me know if you want me to answer some of those, but that's kind of my question about my daughters. I think it's even bigger than that. It's not just about protecting them. It's about kind of creating an atmosphere and a culture where all of our kids can do better.
Yeah. I'm a certified human trafficking trainer for the medical field, because now doctors have mandated CMEs in the state of Texas, which is awesome. Yep. That the state of Texas requires that for nurses and dentists and right on down the line. So I'm one of those trainers, just got certified for that. And so I know the answer to this.
Good job.
But I want you to help our audience to know and our listeners to know, is there a group of people or type of people that these Romeos, these groomers, these hookers that sit back and look, that they tend to magnetize themselves towards? Is there certain types of people that has red flags say, pick me?
Yeah, absolutely.
Traffickers
target vulnerable people. I mean, that's the bottom line. Trafficking looks really different based on the culture and the community in which you live, right? Trafficking in Cambodia is going to look very different than a village in Nigeria, then it's going to be the streets of Brooklyn, then Seattle, then Houston even. I mean, Houston specifically has some really unique typologies of crime, as we would call it. And so every city kind of has its own, you know, different behaviors, for lack of better words. But what that, regardless of the culture, the city, the type of crime even, the number one common factor is that traffickers target vulnerabilities. They look for vulnerable people in our communities. And here's the thing that I think is so great, doctors. You can all of us can close our eyes right now and we can picture who the most marginalized, vulnerable people are in our own neighborhoods, regardless of where you're listening from today. You know who that is. You see your own neighborhood. We lived in a small town before we moved here in Oregon. I know where the homeless street kids hung out. I knew where what did my foster daughter called it? Spanging, asking for spare change. She called it spanging. She'd say, I just want to go out and spange. I know where the kids hang out. Guess what? So do predators. Yeah. And predators are going to have really different tactics to hook you based on age. You know, elementary, middle, high school, they all have very different predatory behavior. And so it's important that if they know that, we should too. Right? We can't let them be more alert than us, more astute, more educated. Like, we've got to be too, because we want our communities and our families to be safe.
Is the old stereotypes that what we grew up in, maybe, I know I'm at least one generation older than you, possibly two, that we grew up in of the mink coats, the velvet hats and the pink Cadillacs, and that's the ones that are out there pimping their girls. It's really not like that anymore, right?
Right. I mean, the movies have been done us such a disservice into, you know, stigmas and stereotypes, not just of that, but even the movie Taken. You know, we're picturing, you know, a girl gripping at the carpet, you know, under her bed, being pulled out by one leg. And so the thing that people need to remember that's so important is that as trafficked victims, we grew up in the same culture as all of you. We too watched those movies. We too have those pictures of what it looks like. So when the water is heating up around us and we're in dangerous situations, but they don't look like what we've all been taught, we collectively, we don't even know to ask for help. It's like you realize it when it's too late, because we're showing the wrong thing. We're showing a very sensationalized version of what this actually looks like right under our own noses every day.
This is big money, isn't it?
Oh, trafficking makes ridiculous money. It's such high profit for traffickers and such little risk for them, because right now our criminal justice system is set up to continually arrest the person in prostitution, not necessarily the exploiter or the buyer. It's an interesting way that we're trying legislatively to begin shifting some of who is being targeted by law enforcement operations, which I worked some operations in Houston. I can share with you all about those fun times. But, you know, I think it is. It's different. It's a different situation than people realize. And yeah.
On the other side of our first break, and I want to just kind of prelude, just answer a question real quick. At what age were you first approached to be trafficked?
I was probably 18, almost 19, around the time that I met my first trafficker. You know, trafficking, there's so many different statistics out there. What I think is important is that as our field has evolved and research continues, we're actually seeing that the average age of target varies, again, based on type of trafficking. You know, Houston has a huge issue with cantinas. Cantinas, trafficking through cantinas are very prevalent in the Houston area. Bissonnette Street, known as the track, that is where you're going to have street walking type of human trafficking happening. Oftentimes those traffickers are kind of urban pimps. You're going to have familial trafficking, which child welfare is going to see. It's going to look very different in your school systems and your medical centers, your pediatrics, very different than you would see in either cantinas or on the street. You have illicit massage parlors like never before in so many cities, but, you know, especially San Francisco, Houston, Florida. We saw that with the Robert Kraft case. These are places where people are coming in on legal visas and they're attached to that one employer, which creates a really difficult power dynamic for a culture of people that actually don't know how to navigate the systems. And there's a lot of cultural shame and situations that take place for them that make it really hard to come forward. So when you think of all of those multiple types of trafficking, it's hard to say there's one average age, right? Because all of those type of trafficking targets different ages of people. So I'm grateful for the statistics we used to hear 10 years ago. I think there's research now that's starting to kind of debunk and say there's different ages based on typology. And I'm excited because that gives us better tools that we can take to prevent and to help people escape. And yeah, I can go on and on.
Okay, fantastic. We're going to take our first break. On the other side of this break, I want to jump into your life story as deep as you want to go. And we'll use the next segment for that. And then I will always like to end with the final segment being on hope. What can we do to detect it? What can we do if we recognize it or fear that it is there? And we'll talk about that after the next one. But this one, we're going to talk about how it got you trapped. How did you get the story behind of In Pursuit of Love, the roadmap to redemption. We'll be right back after our first commercial break with Rebecca Bender, 888-627-6008. Call somebody or text somebody, say, hey, watch this next segment. It's going to be powerful. We'll be right back. Finally coming very soon will be the release of my second book in the three-part trilogy, Overcoming the Darkness, the Roadmap to Hope. Now, this book will be an in-depth look at the many different facets and emotions that a person goes through when they're experiencing anxiety and trauma in their life, and they're simply searching for hope. And an exciting addition to this book will be a companion journal guide that will come along with it. Also, there's going to be something that I'm very excited about, the youth version of this book called When Dark Clouds Come, The Roadmap to Hope. And it's going to be an excellent tool and guide for teenagers dealing with stress in their lives. So stay tuned for the release date coming very, very soon for these exciting new resources. Now back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams on the BBS Radio Network. Welcome back live from Houston, Texas. I'm here with Dallas native, resident now, Rebecca Bender, talking about her life story and the things that she is involved in. And Rebecca, before we get into that, can you just throw out, because I want to make sure we don't go long. Every now and then I'll chase a rabbit and we'll go, and then they'll cut us off. And I want to make sure, if somebody wants to get on your webpage right now, and I want to let you know, don't let anybody else in the world know this, I got on yours, and immediately when I saw your webpage, I said, that's what I want mine to look like. And I contacted the company, and I sent them an email, and I said, I want it to look like this. Whatever she did, whatever templates they used, excellent. I applaud you on your webpage. What is the address? How can people get on that to find out more about you and what you do?
Yeah, it's just RebeccaBender.org. Real easy. You can go there. There's a button that'll link you out to the school to learn more. There's a resource page, gives you all of our e-courses and downloads, and you can buy the books, all the things. So RebeccaBender.org.
Yeah, and I did take one of the courses, and I loved that. And that was several weeks ago.
What'd you take?
I took the one on human trafficking, initial one, and it was like, wow, this is good. I was wanting to make sure when I was developing my PowerPoints, was I missing something or looking at it through? Because my experience with trafficking was my dad literally sold me to his friends on Mondays and Tuesdays, several right after another. But so it was a little different than me being on the streets or being taken to another city. Yeah. So tell me
That's such a great example of what we just said before the break, was like familial trafficking is going to look very different than street prostitution. And yet, the exchange of another human being by the use of force, fraud, or coercion, for a commercial purpose, that's the definition of human trafficking, right? It's the use of force, fraud, or coercion and of monetary value. Something generally has to be exchanged of monetary value for another human being. That's the definition of trafficking. And I'm so sorry that, you know, you have that story, and I'm grateful for all that you're doing to help raise the awareness on child abuse and trauma and the variety of ways that it's going to look, so we can all be more aware. what to look for.
I applaud you because it's the same type of situation. You using what you've went through to now make a difference in other people's lives to help them, whether they've gone through it or they're still involved in it. So in your story, Rebecca, that's a powerful story. And I know it can't be done in 15 minutes, but I do recommend everybody to buy the book. It's a well-written piece of work. And maybe soon, I don't know how soon, maybe we shouldn't even let that out of the bag, but maybe you'll be on the big screen with the movie rights of your life that have been interested in anyway. But tell me about what and how and as deep as you want to go into about human trafficking and how it involved you in your world.
Yeah. I mean, again, like you said, 15 minutes, please go read the book, not just because we want you to support the work of survivors, but also so you know that, you know, I'm just trying to hit on some high points of the story. Right. Don't send me hate mail if you're like, you didn't say that on Dr. Greg's show, you know. No, I'm kidding. But I grew up in a small town in Oregon. I'm actually fourth generation Oregonian. My dad pulled a green chain at the local lumber mill, just small town, blue collar family. My mom was a stay at home mom. She taught aerobics on the side and it was a fun childhood. I grew up skipping rocks on the river and eating a tomato out of the garden with a salt shaker. And just, I was an only child, but I had a lot of cousins and aunts and just was a, you knew everyone. You rode your bike down the street to your neighbors and it was a good time. But every family even has, you know, secrets and vulnerabilities. And my parents fought a lot. They were pretty volatile fighters. And so that kind of desensitized me some to violence in the home. My dad started drinking. He's sober now. He's great. We have a great relationship. But that still left some wounds in me. I can remember being little, maybe 6 or 7. And there was a knock at our door. And my dad had me hide all the alcohol. And I can remember just that moment of thinking, we keep secrets. We keep secrets in this home, right? And you hide it and you push it and you don't talk about it. And so little things in our lives create these childhood wounds, as you well know better than anyone. I'm preaching to the choir here. But as you're growing up as a teenager and a young adult, I think it's very rare that we, and maybe these are conversations, you know, if you're listening in today that you haven't had, maybe you should have. If you have a 20-year-old, I have a 21-year-old now. And you know, the childhood trauma is real. And all of us have little vulnerabilities that took place when we were little that if we don't talk about and work through, they'll keep digging holes deeper. So those were some of mine. My parents divorced when I was 9, real ugly divorce. My mom got a boyfriend that wasn't great. My dad started drinking a lot more. So just a really 9 to about 13 was really hard for me. Felt very alone, very unimportant. But I was a fun, gregarious kid. And so I'd push it aside and I'd be the class clown and I'd, you know, be the yes girl. And, you know, even though I was a varsity athlete and an honor roll student, I'd also be the first one to, you know, ask a guy to buy us beer and go to the bonfire in the pickup truck after a football game. You know, just I wanted to be a part of things. I wanted to love and be loved. I wanted a community to belong with. And I found that if I didn't talk about it and I pushed my boundaries a little, then people would like me. And that's a real dangerous place to position yourself as a young person. So right out of high school, I got pregnant, gave up my dorm room at the university, went to community college. And I ended up moving back up to the community, or excuse me, I ended up moving up to the college town where all my friends had gone to college in the dorms. They'd moved out, got an apartment. And I thought, you know what, this isn't going to stop me. And I'm going to go after my dreams, even if I have my little girl. And I got up there and it was very different being a single 18-year-old mom trying to figure out the community college up there and just all the things. You know, you didn't have your support of your cousins or your aunts or your parents. And I started to feel really alone again. And I think those same vulnerabilities that I had from 9 to 13 started to really resurface. And I didn't have the tools or even the language to put to the feelings I felt back then. But someone else did. This really, you know, attractive young man seemed to have all the answers and all the ways to solve the problems. And you can still go after our dreams and we can do this together. And everything was about us and we. It wasn't like me and you or your dreams and my. Everything started his language. It's like he sold you on this idea. what I found out later is, you know, that's what we would define as Romeo traffickers. That's what they do, is they're con artists who actually get to know exactly what that person desires. And they're like a chameleon, and they become that when that's never been their intention or who they are. And when you think of the definition of human trafficking, the use of force, fraud, or coercion, the most fraudulent component you could do is date a young person for 6 months, pretending, having a different job, having a different, like so many things that were defrauded about him that I just didn't know at 18, 19. I just thought I was in love and really excited to get out of my small town and to go back to a place of having dreams and ambition and excitement that I hadn't had since being a single mom trying to figure it out, you know?
Right.
So we dated for, like I said, 6 months. And then he told me that his job was relocating him to Las Vegas. And I begged to go. I think that's a real different picture than the movie Taken. And so I like to point it out because, you know, I think he just used reverse psychology a lot on me. And I thought, you know, my dream is so close to having this family that broken 9-year-old me wanted, that I desperately wanted for my little girl, that I didn't know all. Obviously, he wasn't like, actually, as soon as we arrive, I'm going to traffic you and you will be potentially murdered and you're going to have rates of PTSD. Of course, no one would say yes. So I didn't know what I was getting into. And we got to Las Vegas and he forced me into human trafficking within about 24 or 48 hours of arrival.
So he already had that set up. So it was just like he was playing this game, lying to you,
yeah,
hook you, and then, okay, now I'm going to take her to the location, yeah, where I do business.
He already had another victim there even. So he well knew what was going on. He definitely painted a picture different than I was told. I had already danced at a strip club. My aunt was a dancer. That wasn't something that I hadn't already known about. And so when we got there and he said, this would just be dancing and this is how we're going to get all the moving money back, because that's what I was using for my business. I thought, okay, I'll do it one night and then we'll go back to being normal again and happy. And so you just keep chasing this dangling carrot, thinking that it's going to get better the next day. But the first night it wasn't just dancing. He, you know, just said that to be able to get me to walk in the room, and it wasn't just dancing. And I think once you've been exploited that first time, and you have an actual like monetary value of what you're worth, something kind of shifts. Like, I mean, I'm even getting emotional talking about it. Just this, like, this is your literal value now has an actual price tag on it.
What was the price tag on you, that literal value that you first heard?
Well, I mean, it's hard because the first time he brought me to be sold, I didn't know what was going to happen. I ended up being assaulted, and the guy gave me money when I left, which is not how it normally works. And so new to this whole criminal organized crime unit that I didn't know anything about. That's not how it works generally. But anyway, I got in the car and he said, how much did we make? And I, you know, pulled out the money and he grabbed the wad from me. And I said, I think there's about $300 here. And he said, oh, you'll do better next time. You didn't have sex for this, right? Oh. And I just remember feeling so ashamed and embarrassed. And I remember just thinking, like, how did I get here? I'm a good kid from a good home. I got good grades. I was accepted into college. How did I get pushed to this boundary line that I know better than to cross and that I didn't want to cross? And it's like things sometimes happen so quick when you're in the middle of, right, when you have this guy telling you it's one thing and then you're suddenly in a room with a stranger and you are being traumatized. It's like there's that flight, fight, or freeze, right? And for me, I can remember just kind of freezing, like going through scenarios of what to do. And then you think you're going to do this and you're kind of rationalizing for what feels like the blink of an eye. And then the situation changes. And so the things you're thinking through, that's no longer the situation anymore. Like, Does that even make sense?
Yes, it does.
Try not to be too graphic because I don't, you know, I hate getting into that.
Well, I mean, if I remember right, you were laying there, and then all of a sudden, if I'm thinking about the right one, he started choking you.
Different day.
That was a different one.
Different
day. I could see that being, hey, this is how I'm going to respond. But then when it got to that degree, it's like, wait, I didn't sign up for this at all.
That was probably my most, I'm in screenplay mode. That the moment that you're thinking of is definitely one of the most pivotal moments in my personal life of thinking, I'm not going to make it out of this. And my baby's not going to have a mama. Wow. And you think of the rates of homicide in a life of prostitution, they're so extremely high. Serial killers target women in prostitution. I knew two women that died in the 6 years I was there, strangled to death, thrown out in hallways. We had a case up in Oregon where a girl was strangled on Christmas morning, thrown out in a stairwell of a Hilton hotel. Just like, it's a very, very dangerous, dangerous industry. I think we're living in a culture right now where we're out of an empowerment mantra and modality, we are really putting a lot of people at risk to not know the quicksand that they're dipping their toes in. This is violence against women. It's rape. It's abuse. It's torture. There are really dangerous people out there behind closed doors. And you think, I'm going to fight my way. I'm going to get out of this. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that, until you're in the moment. And then you try what you think has worked and what you've seen on TV, and it didn't help. And so all of a sudden then, you know, the guy's moving to a different room or he's done. And you're like, oh, well, do I just run out the door now? Or it's just like things just change really quickly. And it's hard to make really sound, healthy decisions. What I find adults say the most, and I'm an adult too, of course, but what I find people say is like, well, why didn't you just do this, this, or this, right? They have their own ideas of what people should do. And I think my answer generally is, well, that's a really sound, healthy response from a healthy adult brain. But you have to remember the people that we're serving, people involved in human trafficking, oftentimes are kids, they're teenagers, their prefrontal cortex isn't developed, they don't have cognitive reasoning, they're traumatized, they've been desensitized to violence in their home or abuse prematurely. Huge percentage of people in human trafficking have been were sexually abused as children. Like, they're not thinking from a healthy adult brain. They're thinking from a little traumatized brain. And so we can't judge, why didn't you do this in the room? Why didn't you do that? I was 19 and scared, didn't know where my daughter was, and I froze. And there's many days that I regret and I wish that I wouldn't have. And yet you get sucked into this for years, it becomes very cult-like. There's actually research out there from the University of Northern Colorado that proves that domestic human trafficking meets every cult-like behavior. I mean, this is brainwashing. This is rewards for cooperation. It's, you think we're smart enough, you wouldn't get brainwashed today. That's just not the truth. There are people that still get brainwashed today.
Oh, we have lots of people in this world that's brainwashed. They just don't know it in so many different ways. In so many different ways. So how did, because I know there's just, and that's why I don't want to talk too much about the book, because it's worth the read, because every page you go into lots of different stories and times in your life. When did you actually, how long were you involved in it? And then how did you get out in the manner that you did, so we can turn the corner here?
Yeah, I was in it for almost 6 years.
6 years.
In and out. Yeah, a few times, tried to run multiple times. I had a stint where I got out for a little bit. 6 years, multiple arrests, branded twice. Three traffickers in that 6 years, two of which tattooed their names on my back.
We're going to talk about that.
Had my face broken in multiple places. I've been put in emergency rooms from passing out in hotels for dehydration and overexhaustion. Went to the emergency room. So really, really hard time. I tried to kill myself twice. I just was so hopeless. But by the grace of God, I had this, you know, moment where I thought I was going to die from being strangled to death, and kind of put me on my own pilgrimage of is there a power greater than myself? And why did I live when others hadn't? And that kind of shifted my trajectory when I was finally able to run after 6 years for good. And and start over with nothing, starting over at 27, 28, with absolutely nothing. The same vulnerabilities that got me trafficked in the first place, single mom trying to figure out school and poverty. But now it's been 6 years. I've compounded complex compound trauma, PTSD, criminal record. It's even worse. It's even worse when you finally get out. It's worse than the first time. So this is why we try to help, you know, people today get job ready, because that's really what it's about, is trying to help you figure out your next steps after escape too. And wow. Yeah.
Okay, we're going to take our last commercial break. On the other side of this, we're going to talk about how we can recognize it. I want to ask a question on the other side. When you was in all those emergency rooms being treated by doctors, did any of them ask you the question? And unfortunately, I may know the answer to that already, but we'll find out. And then we're going to find out how faith was involved in this, and then what people can do to educate themselves and to help other people that's in this. Don't leave us. 888-627-6008. We'd love to have you have a question, or get on Shattered by the Darkness Facebook page. And my son Curtis is there watching your comments right now. If you have a question, you can do it through that, and then Curtis will let me know that it's there. Be right back after this last commercial break.
From HCI Publishing, that brought you the international bestsellers, A Child Called It, and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years, and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
Welcome back. I want to just put this up here. This is the Kindle version of her book, In Pursuit of Love, One Woman's Journey from Trafficked to Triumph by Rebecca Bender. And you will want to get on, can you see that? Get online and look at this. This is just the thing I love about this is the resources that you have in it too. And I appreciate not only telling the story, but trying to help people in the process of telling that story. So I appreciate that. So tell me, Rebecca, and I thank you for getting real and getting emotional, because how can you tell these stories and not? Did anybody in that medical field ever go, hey, come here, are you okay? Is anything wrong? Do you need help?
You know, it's interesting. I think, you know, we have probably been in similar conferences where we're trying to train emergency room staff on some of the red flags. I think back when I was being trafficked was from, I'm trying to think of the years now, 2001 to 2007 off the top of my head. It wasn't nearly as talked about it as it is today. And so I think people were still looking for the wrong thing. They just didn't know. And so I know it's to no fault. When I've trained medical professionals, I feel bad, because a lot of them will come up after and say, I just didn't know. Like, I didn't know. And now I'm picturing all these people and all of their red flags that you just trained me on. I can see their faces, and I didn't know. And we did a conference at the National Association of Emergency Medical Responders, the NAEMSP. I'm sure you're familiar with the acronym is. And I can remember the next day getting an email from a doctor out of Illinois that said, I had just returned back from the conference. I had listened to the training, And he said that very night, the next day, a young girl, 16 year old, came in. He said, normally I would have dismissed her as a runaway youth with potential substance abuse. I would have given her a hotline. And he said, this time I saw all the red flags and I called a human trafficking service provider and they came and picked her up. And tonight she's safe. And I just was like, this is it. Like, this is the reason that we do it, is so that they can see victims different. And it's because they want to. And people are in the medical industry because they want to help people. But trainings matter. Trainings are important.
Yeah. What's some of the things, because I know there's so many red flags and dog-eared pages in lives of people, but what are some of the things that are such telltale signs that we need to all be aware of in somebody that could be a potentially trafficked victim?
Yeah, well, just to remind people, there's multiple typologies of crime. Yeah, so my examples are going to be specific to women involved in pimp-controlled human trafficking. That means escorts, street prostitution, things of that nature. So some of the red flags would be if they come in during high prostitution hours, 9 p.m. to 2, 3 a.m., that's a red flag. They come in hypersexual clothing and attire. And not one of these things on their own should be trafficking, but usually right. It's multiple, being really thoughtful around who's attending with them, who's coming into ER with them. Did they get picked up from a hotel by an EMT? Did the EMT notice anything in the room that they documented potentially? Was there condoms? Was there things in the room that they could have maybe noticed as an emergency medical responder? Did the hotel they show up to have outward facing doors and not a lobby? Those are real telltale signs that we work a lot with EMTs to document in charts for the emergency room staff to recognize, because they're not going to see the context in which the victim potentially or patient or client or whatever industry you're in is picked up from. Some other things, like I said, who's with them? Are they coming alone? Did they come with another female? Is she watching? Has she been potentially being rewarded for regurgitating what the doctor says and making sure that girl stays quiet? Or does she come in with an older man? Someone usually 5 years or older is typically kind of a red flag for trafficking. Some other things would be no insurance. Oftentimes trafficked victims, they're going to attend urgent cares, emergency rooms, Planned Parenthoods, pregnancy resource centers, things that are going to be quick and fast because they don't have a regular care provider. Because traffickers don't care if you have insurance, and you relocate frequently. So there's all of those things. So if you serve in one of those potential locations, be thoughtful around some of those things. And if you can check all of them on the list, you should be calling law enforcement and asking for a human trafficking detective.
What about their personalities? What about their countenance? How they interact with the doctor? What would the typical person be?
This is great.
The doctor starts asking questions and things.
Great question, because I see what I would feel like can be some misconceptions sometimes in some trainings that I'm sure you and I both have been through. What I would encourage people to know is it is a heightened emotional response on either spectrum. So either they're either going to withdraw and not want to talk to you and not engage and not look up and not make eye contact. Right. Or you're going to say, how many sexual partners have you had in a year? And they're going to say, I've had 365 and... Right. Yeah. So like a really extreme response on either spectrum should be a red flag. And that's just based on personality. I was the louder one. You know, I'd cuss at a doctor. I'd cuss at a cop. I was a hardened, angry young girl who didn't get to voice any of her emotions when I was in the home. It was like a Stepford wife. You know, you eat what he eats. You walk where he, you wear what. And so I'm finally around a safe person and it all just would explode. And so that's equally as much as a red flag as someone who doesn't want to make eye contact and talk with you. It's important to recognize both as signs, not one or the other.
Wow. What about this branding? You mentioned you were branded twice. There's a lot of education on there that's involved in the mandated reporting that you have to talk about. What do you see as some of the most common branding that could be recognized as, wait, that's not a typical tattoo?
Yeah, this is great. And especially, medical providers are going to see brandings quicker than other people because oftentimes they're able to inspect body. Also, I'd say physical signs of injury, physical signs of malnutrition, of dehydration, of overexhaustion, untreated wounds, bruises on the body that might be able to be hidden by clothing, right? This is a product to the trafficker that has to be sellable. It's not always going to be beating someone on the face. They're going to be potentially hurting you where you can cover it up. And so brandings are very typical. You're going to see brandings on the back, on the neck, much like any gangs. You can imagine someone comes in and it says Crips on the arm. There's an assumption. There's just a given assumption. I'm not trying to stereotype. I'm just assuming based on the name of the gang that's well known. So it's very similar in organized crime with trafficking. There's very common types of symbols. And so money signs, crowns, initials, full-on names, those are going to be often what you're going to look for. And you can always ask, what's that about? Of course, they're going to have a lie that they've been brainwashed to regurgitate to you. But the mere fact you've noticed and documented something with a crown, a money sign, a dollar sign, reference to money, reference to wealth, and initials, usually combined, is a sign of trafficking.
Great. I know we only have a few minutes. I knew this would go by really fast. because your book address this, I wrote down a couple of quotes. One was, God had helped me to prune the huge branches of addiction, but the destructive root of trauma was still there. And then another quote, he said, my transformation didn't happen overnight. It required daily choices towards God, towards his work, and towards his truth. How important was your faith in the freedom, the true freedom of getting away from this and becoming the person that you are now?
I mean, my faith played a huge part in my recovery. And I know everyone has varying faith traditions. And so I definitely want to recognize no one's trying to proselytize any one faith on another. What I do think is really important for anybody is if you've been through some kind of abuse or hardship, there tends to be trauma that if we don't address, it will stay there and it gets bigger. You know, trauma and abuse is like cancer in your spirit. Like it impacts all these other parts of your life. It's not like you can turn it off and turn it on. It's like putting, you know, a drop of red dye in a cup of water. It permeates all of your relationships, your kids, your parents, your everything. And so we have to take daily self-aware inventory of going, you know what, I've become really critical. You know what, I've become really bitter. How do I stop that? How can I be purposeful around my word choice today? And just thinking through, I've lived through fire. I'm going to smell like smoke. And if I just go around and go, that's just who I am, take it or leave it. It's like, that's not true. That's not just who I am. Actually, some things I've been through aren't healthy. And some habits I've created are, you don't want to keep into the next season of your life. And so how do you take inventory on your own character to figure out what those things are that may have become habitual or modeled for you as a kid that you don't actually want to be? Like you actually have the freedom to become whoever you want to be. And that's not easy. It takes a lot of work to create new habits in your life. But it first starts with feeling empowered enough to do so and being self-aware enough to say, you know, maybe I want to jot down 5 things that I want to change about myself and put them on a post-it in your car, put them on a post-it when you're getting ready, keep them in the forefront of your mind every day so that you can start choosing to speak life and not critique, speak encouragement and not be bitter. Like, you're not going to hit it out of the park all the time. My kids were sitting here. They'd be like, Mom, you don't do that either. I'd be like, shut your mouth. I do it 5 out of 10. I'm getting better, right? Like no one's perfect in this. No one's saying we've all got it right, but you got to make an effort. I mean, the worst thing is to just sit there and say, oh, it's just who I am. Take it or leave it. That's what you don't want to get stuck. So
if we only have a couple minutes, if a parent is listening tonight, what one piece of advice would you give to all the parents in the world right now, if you had 1 minute to share on the national stage and every parent's listening, what would that be?
Okay, I'm going to give 1 minute of some advice for okay. elementary, middle, and high school. I'm going to be quick, though. Don't worry. I won't take up your too much time.
No, you're doing fine. We're doing fine.
If you have a child that's elementary age, you need to be really thoughtful around who is trying to be your friend. Predators target the parents for a child ages under the age of 9. They don't target the child as frequently as they're going to become friends with the parents. I'm sure that you yourself just said your dad's friends, right? The pedophiles will target the parent. They will become friends with the parent. They will look for, they will befriend a family so that eventually they'll gain the trust where they can get that child on their own. Be really thoughtful. If you're a single mom, who's, is the coach being too nice? Is the neighbor trying to help out too much? Don't want us to be jaded and on guard, but I want us to be thoughtful and diligent and not naive. If you have a middle school age child, any type of predator, trafficker or not, someone who might be trying to get child abuse image material, what's known now as CSAM, child pornography is kind of an older, outdated word that people don't use as much anymore. Child sexual abuse material is the new term for that. And they're going to target your kids on gaming devices. They are. So some of the red flags we tell our kids is if anyone's trying to get you to chat off of that gaming device, that's a stranger danger moment. That is as scary as a white van with a guy offering puppy and a candy, okay? Because most of the great kids games that all of our middle school age kids play today, they won't let photos be exchanged. So what do predators have to do? They have to get you to trust them enough to get off that app. Well, why don't we go chat over on TikTok? Well, why don't we go chat over on Snapchat? Why don't we go chat over and that is a red flag for middle school. High school or college age kids, here's my last one. Start teaching your older children to recognize that gut instinct of something's making me uncomfortable here and practice with them how to get out of the room or how to leave the situation. Then don't wait until they're so in love and so far down. I mean, you think of Jeffrey Epstein's victims. Those teenage girls went home to their parents every single day and they went to school every day and they felt uncomfortable in the beginning, but all my friends were there and I didn't know how to leave. I came in a taxi. Right? Get Uber app on your young college daughter's phone and say, when you're in a party and there's some older man that's old enough to be almost your dad's age there, and he comes over and tells you you're pretty, let's talk through what you're going to say to your friend to get it, to go home. Let's role play. And this Uber app is always ready and available for you. And let's start teaching our kids to recognize when your boundaries are just barely being tested, not when you're full on being exploited. So those would be my three tips.
Those are great. That's great wisdom. I tell you what, before we go also, what would the trafficking hotline number be if somebody needs to talk to somebody right now? What would that be? Do you have that on?
Yeah. 888-3737-888. Call the hotline. If you see something, say something. That's how we were finally rescued. A neighbor thought we looked suspicious and finally reported us as drug dealers. We weren't drug dealers, but that's what she thought. But that's the miss. Right?
So because a caring neighbor, it saved your life.
Yep, exactly. And I wish I knew who that lady was. I have no clue today, but hopefully she's listening and she remembers calling a hotline and she could say maybe that made a difference today. So
wow, that's powerful. And if you want to get involved, if somebody is listening, because we have a lot of medical professional people and social workers and counselors that listen to the program around the world, if they think, wow, she's somebody I would love to have come and do a 1 hour thing, a 2 hour thing, a 3 day conference, whatever. I know you go from small to as large and you're not a cookie cutter type of conference speaker. I have a feeling you created for what they need you to present. How would they get in touch with you? What would be the best way? Through your website?
Yeah, just go on the website. There's a booking form there. If you have a conference, if you're a professional that would like to get some CEUs and invite us into what you're already doing annually, we'd love to be a part. So fill out that form and we'll get in touch.
Fantastic. You know, Rebecca, I can't thank you enough for being with us tonight. I appreciate this so much. And I applaud you for your vulnerability of telling your story. But I really recommend everybody to go out and get In Pursuit of Love, the roadmap to redemption. Matter of fact, you don't even have to leave the house. Get on Amazon right now and just download it or have it shipped to you. And I'm sure.
And the audio book is great. It's actually me reading it. So you get to hear my tone.
I wanted to
and
do that. And I haven't had the nerve to do that yet.
Do it.
That was good for you, huh? You enjoyed that?
Yeah, it was good. It was fun. You'd like it.
I bet it was. Well, that's great. Thank you for being with us tonight from Dallas, Texas. And if there's ever anything that we can do for you, let me know. We'll be right there in your corner. Appreciate it, Rebecca.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
It was our pleasure and honor. Like we do every week, no matter what you're involved with right now, no matter what you've gone through in your past, no matter what's going on right now or tomorrow or next week, I want to let you know, as what you've seen tonight with Rebecca Bender and her life, I want to let you know there's always hope, and there's hope for you. And hang on to that and reach out to somebody that cares. Make the call, contact her, contact me, let somebody know, hey, I may need to talk. I need help. Join us right here next week for another edition of Breaking the Silence. And again, I want to thank Rebecca Bender for having a perfect, perfect show tonight with us tonight from Houston, Texas. God bless you. Have an awesome week. We'll see you next week. Good night.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1 for the next episode of Breaking the Silence.